Hello, I'm John Ellis. Welcome to episode 60 of Pittodrie PS, the predominantly Dons-based podcast featuring not just the Dons first team, but a look across the age groups and genders at the club. And we focus on the respective progress of Cove and Peterhead too, as well as the North East local representatives in the Highland League and juniors. And not just football, but any sport making headlines in the North East of Scotland or featuring someone from the North East of Scotland. Joining me for this journey, as always, Dave McDermott and Andrew Shiney. So here we are, recording this episode on the morning of Tuesday, December 6th, 2022, again, without a Dons League or a Cup game to review because of the World Cup break. But there's plenty more to turn our attention to, and this one, like last week, will begin with the Dons women. Last time, they managed to defeat Dundee United women 2-1 away, their second win in the last three, and it looked like the tide was perhaps turning. But the day after that win, co-managers Emma Hunter and Gavin Beath resigned. So, in the interim, a group of staff tasked with guiding the team in their next fixture against Spartans women at Balmoral Stadium. That one finished 1-1. Francesca Ogilvie scored for Aberdeen first, but the Dons retained their lead for only a very short time before Spartans bagged an equaliser. But, Dave, two wins and a draw in the last four. That sounds like momentum to me.
Yeah, and also you've got to take into context the situation that the girls went through in the build up to the game. It was, you know, obviously a big shock with the change of management team, as has been pointed out by a few people, for probably the majority of that squad. That's the only management team, particularly Emma, that they've ever had in their football career. So, you know, obviously it would have been better with a win, but I think a draw was satisfactory. You know, it does look as though the rot has been stopped, which is the main thing, and now it's a case of trying to get up that table, which they're still sitting second bottom, which is not great.
Yeah, next up, Rangers away on the 18th. That's going to be a massive ask, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the Rangers hit double figures at the weekend against the bottom club, Glasgow, and no, it's going to be a very big test. Without putting too fine a point on it, the girls will be doing well to keep it to a respectable score. I mean, Rangers so much more invested into their women's team, and you know, they're a full-time professional team. It'd be a very, very difficult one, but fingers crossed for them. As I say, hopefully we're on the right track.
Next to the under-18s, going well, but one a little bit ugly, and certainly with a bit of huff and puff last time when they faced Queen's Park, eventually progressing to the next stage of the Scottish Youth Cup. This week, though, it was back to league business at Cormac Park with visitors Rangers, the opposition. That one ended 2-1 for the Dons. The second in the closing stages scored by, well, who else? But Alfie Bavage, take us through it, Andrew.
Well, obviously, as we mentioned last week, Dave and I were on our musical tours, so I wasn't at the game. But a great win for Aberdeen. I'm told it was an excellent game of football, two very strong sides, and Aberdeen showing real guts and determination to come back from a goal down, equalised through a clever Alfie Stewart free kick. And it's nice to see Alfie getting himself in the score sheet, because he's created quite a number of goals in recent weeks. He's a real powerhouse in the middle of the park. Not the biggest in stature, but what he lacks there, he makes up for in technique, in determination. A little bit like Conor Barn, but very left-footed. But he got the equaliser, and then it was end-to-end. I think the Dons had a couple of goals disallowed for offside, but they eventually got their winner a couple of minutes before the end of the game through, as you say, that man, Alfie Bavage. That's his 20th league goal in only 11 games. So he continues to hit the back of the net with incredible regularity. And I think, to be honest, he would probably have swapped one or two of his hat-tricks for a last-minute winner against Rangers. It certainly went down well with the home crowd. I hope it hasn't percolated down to the ladies' team that they're going, right, we've got to get revenge for what that little sod Bavage did to our under-18s come the 18th. I got an up-to-date league table, and Aberdeen actually sit fourth, but they're only 5 points off Celtic, who are in top position, having played three games fewer. So the league table is a bit skewed because clubs have played different numbers of games. If the Dons win their games in hand, they'll be top of the table, and they continue to lead the goal-scoring charts quite comfortably. You mentioned the victory against Queen's Park. The draw for the next round of the Scottish Youth Cup has been made, and Aberdeen are at home to Hamilton Accies. Hamilton going really well in the league. Remember, they beat the Young Dons 6-2 down at New Douglas Park. The Dons got the revenge with a 6-0 victory at Cormac Park. So, scene set for an absolute cracker in the Youth Cup. But I think home advantage will probably shade it for Aberdeen in that one. But in terms of the league campaign, it's still going extremely well.
And I'm always interested in the fact that fashion seems to be cyclical through everything, including names. Who'd have thought you'd have had two Alfies in an under-18s team in 2022? Yeah. But there you go. Right, what's the next game in line for them, Andrew?
The fixture list says that they're down at Hibs. I haven't seen confirmation of that game as yet for this coming Friday. The following Friday, they are at home to Dundee United at Cormac Park. Hibs, not the force that they were last season. Aberdeen have beaten them 4-0 already up here. Needless to say, Alfie Babbage scored a hat-trick. They'll fancy their chances going down there. I mean, that was the scene last season of one of the most incredible games that I've seen, where we had a referee who's, let's say, was maybe slightly favouring the home side, allowed World Cup extra time, 10 minutes of stoppage time in the second half, trying to get Hibs an equaliser, and eventually thought, I need home for my supper. I'd better blow the final whistle on this one. And the Dons won it. And that was when Hibs were virtually untouchable in the league last year. So they'll have no fears of going down to the Hibernian training ground. And as I say, having beaten them comfortably already this season, they'll fancy their chances in that one.
Just having a quick glance through the fixtures there, the past fixtures, I don't think they've lost a game, touch wood and all that, since August.
That's probably right. I mean, yeah. The loss to Celtic very early on in the season, a poor performance, just nobody turned up on the day. And then the loss, as we say, down at Hamilton. And I think, if I remember rightly, that game went to 3-2 to Hamilton. And then Alfie Stewart got himself sent off, penalty 4-2. And they took advantage of having the extra man and ran out comfortable winners. But yeah, they've produced some excellent performances and goals galore, and an excellent side to watch. There's quite big crowds going along to Cormac Park now. Unfortunately, when you're out in the open there and you're standing and it's freezing cold, it's not really conducive to being out watching a game of football. But I think you tend to forget about what the conditions are like when you're watching this team, because they are very pleasing in the eye, work their socks off, and as I say, score loads of goals. And that's what, in the end of the day, football fans go to games for, is to watch goals.
I just wonder, with Barry Robson leading the way, if we're breeding a new era of dead ball specialists as well. Are there any of those rising in that team?
Well, they certainly work very hard in their set pieces. I can assure you of that. Alfie Stewart is excellent on dead balls, as is Dylan Lobban. But there's a lot of good players. Defensively, there's a lot more stable now. They were a little bit haphazard at times last season, but they're much tighter defensively. Creative in the middle of the park, lots of hard workers in there. Finlay Marshall, Lobban, as I mentioned, Stewart, as I mentioned. And the pace that they've got up front through Liam Harvey, Alfie Babbage and Adam Emsley puts the wind up an awful lot of sides, particularly when they're up against kids of their own age or sometimes slightly younger. And this is what we spoke about so long last season. We said, they're struggling a little bit because they're up against older, more experienced, more physically capable boys. Now they're playing against their own age group and slightly younger at times. And they can more than hold their own with their own age group. And inevitably, if it's a younger side that they play, they really dominate them. But Barry keeps them very focused. He wasn't happy at all after the Queen's Park Youth Cup game. He said the only good thing that came out of that was the result, but he'll have been absolutely delighted that he got one over Rangers, because last season we got on the wrong end of a few score lines that didn't reflect the way the games went against the Light Blues. But to get a victory first time out against them this season, it's a real feather in the boys' caps.
All bodes well for the future as well. Cove Rangers next. They too were back to championship action after putting 7 past Dunipace in the third round of the Scottish Cup last time. This time round, they were back at Balmoral Stadium for a game against Partick Thistle. And although it ended 1-1, felt like a loss, didn't it, Dave? How come?
It certainly did. I mean, COVID, plenty of chances, or certainly several chances, to put the game to bed into stoppage time, deep into stoppage time, and Jamie Sneddon, the Thistle keeper, goes up for corner kick, and of course there's no one marking him, and he gets the header for a draw. That fair play to Thistle for getting the draw, but it's very much seen as 2 points dropped for Cove. The only decent factor was that two teams below them, nobody picked up any points. They're both through, and Hamilton got hammered. So there's no damage done. But instead of being 2 points behind Raith Rovers, they're still four points adrift of Raith. So, but it's still very, very tight. And, you know, Cove, I've got absolutely no doubts Cove will remain in the Championship, which is where they're going to finish at the end of the season. But no, definitely a 2 points drop.
Yeah, and because of the nature of that goal, fifth minute of injury time, I think it was, and also the fact it was the keeper, and it was a decent header at that. It's, you know, it's all over, like, you know, sports, social media, all over the place, and it's just going to rub the salt in the wound. Frustrating as well, isn't it? Because as you mentioned there, if they'd secured 3 points instead of just the one, they'd have been within touching distance of that mini group just above them in the 20-something point zone, instead of looking back over their shoulder down towards Arbroath. Still a five-point gap between them and Arbroath. It's just that what-if moment, isn't it?
Every club will point to various results that can be classed in that bracket. You know, if we'd done the business there, if we hadn't lost a goal late on. So that just it's indicative of how tight this Championship is this season. So, as I say, you know, Cover seemed to be playing with a deal of confidence that perhaps wasn't there at the start of the season. So I don't think it's anything other than just a matter of time before they start moving up that table, because, as we've touched on, there's not much of a gap.
Cove now with a week off. Well, next weekend is the quarterfinals of the Scottish Challenge Cup. Their next match, a trip to Dens to face Dundee on the 17th. Peter Head next, the managerless, as we started recording last week, and managed again by the time we finished side. David Robertson, the man in the Balmore dugout now. Whether he'll occupy it for as long as his predecessor remains to be seen, but his debut didn't go according to plan. A 3-0 defeat to Kelty Hearts, who Peter Head really needed to claw back into the mix. The only good thing is that Clyde didn't make any ground in the Mandrew, but I think perhaps Robertson's been brought in with, at the very least, a sort of 50-50 perspective in terms of long-term tasks. Keep us up or get us back up.
When you look at the league table now, Kelty having won, as you said, at the weekend, there's an 11-point gap between Kelty and Clyde, who are second bottom, and then, of course, Peterhead are 2 points further back there. So it's now become a straight race between Clyde and Peterhead to see who can get ninth place. I think looking up the way, it's too big a gap, even this early in the season, to be looking realistically at closing, unless, you know, somebody has a collapse in the second half of the season. And as you say, it could well be looking further in advance that if Peterhead don't go up or don't manage to stay up this season, Davy Robertson will be charged with getting them back up, because they're too big a club and they're geared for a better level of football in every respect than League Two, to be, with all due respect to everybody that's in League Two. It's interesting that Davy Robertson took Ian Esselmont in as his assistant. Ian, who Dave knows very well through junior football, a guy with massive experience and great knowledge of the local football scene. And it was interesting to see that the Peterhead vice chairman came out this week saying, yes, we're looking to be more locally based. Ian is the perfect guy, isn't he, to scour around the junior clubs, the Highland League clubs, with his contacts to get the best of local players in. And that would surely help Peterhead, because this, having a squad that is some training down south, some training up here, you're never going to really get any sort of team bond together, because it's disparate parts coming together on a Saturday. And that's kind of is reflected in their performances and results this season.
Ian's got as good a network as anybody in football in the Northeast in terms of who he knows and the clubs. And I think Peterhead are looking to follow perhaps the Aberdeen example, obviously on a lesser scale. By you know, that means that Ian's appointment makes complete and utter sense, because although he won't thank me for saying he's a bit long in the tooth, as are we, Andrew and me, but he still very, very knowledgeable in local football and still has plenty to offer. So I think it's a very wise appointment.
When you say following the Aberdeen example, Dave, just I think I know what you mean, but qualify that for me.
By bringing players through, you know, having more of a youth setup than Peterhead, as I say, they do rely a lot on players coming up from down south, and that does bring with it its own problems. And also, it's also difficult to attract players from the further away to they start recruiting locally, and you know they've got to have the framework locally to be able to do that. But there's nothing stopping, in theory, you know, they've got Tom Ritchie on loan from Aberdeen. They can perhaps expand that side of it. Look to teams like Cove in terms of getting younger players on loan. It's really just to pay more cognizance on the youth within the northeast of Scotland rather than, and to be honest, for a club like Peterhead, it's very costly bringing players up and down every week for matches. Never mind having two different training bases for them. So it does make long term perfect sense.
Do you think as well? I mean, and looking at sort of Cove and Peterhead here to an extent, where they've got arguably a bigger club on their doorstep. Do you think, you know, making inroads into the local community in the same way that the Dons have done with the Trust, if you like, where they've made some really good contacts and embedded themselves in that community and reminded the community, especially through the likes of COVID, you know, we're here and we're here for you and you and I are together and all of that. Do you think Peterhead and Cove could use a little bit of that as well?
Definitely. Cove also, they did quite a lot of stuff in the community during COVID as well, because I remember when Andrew and I were down at Seafine picking up food supplies, quite often I'd bump into Paul Hartley, who was doing the deliveries on behalf of Cove. If there was any such thing as a silver lining to COVID, it was the fact that clubs do stuff in the community, were able to actually demonstrate just how much they are important within the local communities. So, and yeah, I think Peterhead could probably expand on that because, well, Andrew actually, he got the short straw. He had the Peterhead run to do quite a lot. So, and you got a flat tire once, if I remember.
That's right.
I'm laughing.
Okay, and looking at it this way as well, it doesn't get any easier or less important for Peterhead. I noticed, Andrew, the next match is on the 17th against Clyde at Balmoor. That really is win at any cost, isn't it?
I think it is, to be perfectly honest, John. As I said, you know, there's only the 2 points between Peterhead and Clyde at the moment. And if Peterhead could win that game, how much better would they all feel waking up on the Sunday morning and being able to look at the league table and not seeing their name at the bottom? I know they're still going to be in second bottom place, but it would be a huge confidence boost. Okay, they're not looking up the way, because as I say, there's still going to be this big gap to Kelty Hearts. But just to have the knowledge that instead of being in an automatic relegation position, they'd be in a playoff, it would be a great fillip to them. But I think it's quite good that they don't have a game this weekend, because it gives Davy Robertson and Ian Esselman a chance to work with the squad. I mean, they've done okay in a lot of games. I mean, it was nothing each at half-time. Then they conceded first minute of the second half at Kelty. And then they were going, seemed to be very tight all the way through to, I think it was the 82nd minute. And then Andrew McDonald got sent off, penalties awarded. Nicky Lowe, ex-Don, of course, now at Kelty, converted the penalty. And then they get a third one right at the death, which maybe puts a slightly flattering gloss in the scoreline for Kelty Hearts, but it seems to have been the position so often for Peterhead. They battle hard, but they just don't score enough goals. They've only scored 10 goals in 17 league games, and if you can't get yourself ahead and have something to hold on to, it's very difficult, because then you concede and you're in the back of your mind you're going, we're just never going to score here because we haven't scored in so many games. And that's the way it turned out again last Saturday. But yeah, it's a massive game. And talking about the community and the football club all getting together, this is an occasion where Everybody that's got Peterhead in their hearts has got to get themselves along to Balmoor Stadium and play their part, be the 12th man, and see if they can guide the Blue Toon to a victory, which would be so, so important for them.
Gosh, that was almost like Michael Sheen trying to rally Wales. To the Highland League teams, a split again this week with some competing in the league and others in the Highland League Cup. League results first: Strathspey Thistle 0, Rothes 7, Huntly 5, Wick Academy 2, Keith 2, Fraserburgh 2. And in the Cup, Banksiddy 3, Forest Mechanics 2, Fermanagh United 1, Bucky Thistle 3, Lossiemouth 0, Brechin City 2, and Turriff United 0, Inverurie Locos 1. For the league, that means, well, not all that much, really. Bucky Thistle top and goal difference from Brechin, but having played two games more. Brunner at third on 37, Fraserburgh at fourth on 34 points. In the juniors, Dave?
Well, the Scottish Cup fourth round tie at Lark Hall ended after 90 minutes. Lark Hall Thistle 1, East End 1, went to penalty kicks, and severe disappointment as East End bowed out 7-6 in spot kicks. So very, very close and very unlucky. But no North sides now left in the national competition. In the Regional Cup, to give it its short name, round two, Aberdeen Uni 4, Banksiddy 1, Colney Park 0, Bridgeton Thistle 4, Cooter 1, Fraserburgh United 0, Montrose Rosalie 2, Dice 1, Newmarket United 4, against Premier League Dufftown, 0. So it was a great result for Ewan Robb's side. Rothes Rovers 2, Isle of Wight 1, and Sunnybank 1, Hermes 7. That was one that I predicted would be a fairly tight affair. Got that one completely wrong, obviously. In the Premier League, Bankery against Stonehaven was postponed because of an access problem for Milton Park in Bankery. Although, having played at Milton Park, I can't remember any access point at all, but it was a while ago. Nairn St Ninian 1, Maud 0, Stonywood Parkvale 3, Ellen United 3 in the Championship, Devon side 1, Burkhead Thistle 2, Forest Thistle 1, Longside 0, Lossiemouth United 2, Clontarf 3, and New Elgin 1, Buckenhaven Hearts 3. This week, there's only two Premier League games: Bankery against Dufftown, Colony Park versus Cooter. And the main focus is on the Quest Engineering Cup second round. Some good ties there. Bridgeton Thistle against Buckenhaven Hearts, Dice versus Isle of Wight, Ellen against Maud, Forest against Stonehaven, Glentanner Stonewood Parkvale, Hermes East End, which should be the game of the day, Montrose Rosalie versus Rothes Rovers, and Sunnybank against Fraserburgh United.
I noticed there you mentioned the Regional Cup to give it its short name. Is there any comedic potential in its long name?
Is it, that was the one that's sponsored by Domino's.
Oh, right, okay.
The North Region NRGFA Regional Cup in association with Domino's round two.
Fantastic. I tell you, the trophy writer is paid by the letter. He's probably thinking, come on, let this come on. Let this one job come in before Christmas. Let's do the same as we did last week and take a look at the World Cup over the last 7 days. Thoughts, Dave? I assume you're going to talk about Brazil last night.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I've said it before the competition started. I couldn't see past Brazil, and absolutely nothing has conspired to make me change my mind. I mean, the opening goal for Vinicius Junior last night was so sublime. The way he picked the one place that none of the four or five defenders could get the ball at, it was absolutely brilliant. And France are looking good. England, of course, are looking brilliant. Listen to the pundits, but I do think it's very hard to look past Brazil. But I'm enjoying it. I mean, I felt sorry for Japan yesterday because I've loved watching Japan. They're absolutely fantastic to watch, and they bring a freshness that's, sometimes it's called a naivety as well, but it's not great stuff to watch.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think it's refreshing as well to watch all the different cultures at the World Cup. Just the fact that even before they'd kicked off in their own fixtures, there were Japanese fans in the stadium of a fixture that wasn't theirs, and they went around still cleaning up after the game. They were like picking up all the rubbish, putting it in the bags. And they said, whatever game we go to, we always do this. And there are photos today of the Japanese manager bowing to all the fans for turning out and supporting the team. And it's refreshing to watch this sort of stuff, Andrew. Even South Korea last night against Brazil, I actually thought they're not a bad-looking team, South Korea. The only problem was they thought, well, we'll just go toe-to-toe with Brazil instead of perhaps maybe playing a little bit more with the heat instead of the heart.
Yes, as Dave said, perhaps naivety is the word that you could use there, because they are a decent side. They've got some very good players.
Their goal was outstanding.
Their goal was brilliant, yes. But and to be fair, Alisson made three great saves in that game, but the Brazilians had missed a few chances and obviously in the second half dropped down two or three gears.
Yeah.
But it is a little bit ambitious to go 4v4 at the back when you've got Rapinho, Richarlison, Neymar and Vinicius Jr. against four defenders. The chances are these four attackers are going to rip you a new one, and they did. But some of the goals were outstanding. As Dave mentioned the first one, but Richarlison's goal, I mean, that was just a thing of beauty. And they do look a very, very good side when they really hit their stride, Brazil. As do France. England will give France a very tough game. I just feel that France have got too much up front for England to deal with. But it's going to be a very close game indeed. Harvey obviously agrees with me. That's going to be a close one.
Somebody's come to the door exactly the wrong time.
But that is dog speak for, come on, you England.
Well, you know, I actually think England are looking pretty good. And I just wonder for France if perhaps maybe it's a World Cup too many for a couple of the older players, Andrew?
Possibly, but when you know that it's your last chance, you're going to give it everything, aren't you? And we're now at the quarterfinal stage. You've only got three games. So, you know, you leave nothing in the tank when you come away from it because you know that there isn't another one to go to. But you know, quality always shines through in the end of the day. And it's going to be interesting. The Argentina, good win against Australia. I thought that was a decent game. Argentina, obviously Messi, outstanding in the second half, led them. At 2-0 up, you thought they're cruising. And then all of a sudden, Australia got a goal. And then the boy Bahich from Dundee United thinks that he's Messi and goes in a mazy and almost scores an equaliser. And then the teenager right at the end, whose name I can't remember, unfortunately, almost scored as well. So Australia bow out with their heads held high. That's Scotland B out of the competition because there were so many players with Scottish connections there that I'm sure a lot of people in our country were supporting the Australians. But they acquitted themselves extremely well. So there's been some countries have been disappointing. Wales primarily, Germany, Belgium. There's a lot of countries need to do a reset now.
Yeah.
You can tell that the rebuilding jobs need to be done.
Golden eras have passed, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And you're hoping that, you know, the way Scotland have been progressing in recent years, they might just be slightly ahead of the curve.
Well, you never know. I still think Argentina...
Time will tell there.
I still think Argentina...
They've still got some decent players. Yeah, we're getting away from that.
They're going to be the first, probably ahead of us by taking a McAllister to the latter stages of a tournament, I'd have thought.
Aye, possibly. certainly looking forward to the next few games. It's going to build up to a really good climax, I'm quite sure, out in Qatar.
Okay. Would you care to venture the names of a winner? Are you sticking with who you had last week? Not that I can remember who that was.
Well, I'm with Dave. I kind of see past Brazil. Although when they did put the second string out against Cameroon, they didn't look that great. But then it was a dead rubber and they weren't playing for anything. You saw yesterday in the first half against South Korea, when there was something to be played for, they just put the foot to the pedal and blew the Koreans off the face of the earth. They've got that in their squad.
And it is all that samba stuff, and they are enjoying it, and they are dancing. They're dancing on the bus on the way into the blooming stadium, never mind when they're on the park. The one of the things that interested me throughout this, can you imagine some of these celebrations had it been the Scottish Premiership? Can you imagine the bookings that our referees would be dishing out? They're over at all the squad, they're over at the manager, the samba. Can you imagine that? I don't know why they don't get booked.
Well, obviously, there's been a diktat from up high, you know, just add the time on. I think that's what they're doing. They're just adding time on for all the celebrations. But I would have loved to have seen what would have happened had that been the Republic of Ireland of the early 90s that Brazil were playing against yesterday, because I think Roy Keane would have gone and lamped every single one of those Brazilians for dancing, particularly when it reached the, you know, was it Richarlison's goal where they all went across?
Oh, they're all going at it, yeah.
And even the 60-odd-year-old coach
manager
was
involved, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I actually think Roy Keane might end up lamping Graeme Souness at some point when I'm watching ITV doing their coverage. That is pretty much it for episode 60 of Pitodry PS. We aim to publish every week on a Tuesday if we can. Always looking back to the Dons' previous fixtures and ahead to the next. Please remember to follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could rate and review us, tell us what you think of the show as well. We'd be very grateful. Thanks for checking out Pitodry PS. We'll see you next time.